You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, April 24th, 2020. My name is Sam Seder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. Casual Friday, folks. So casual, I neglected to mention that we're steps and steps and steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal. However, we do have with us via Zoom today, Emma Viglin will be here to look back on the week that was. David Feldman will be here probably to chide us about something. Meanwhile, it's been a little more than a month, and the coronavirus death toll reaches nearly 50,000 people in the United States. The Small Business Aid Interim Bill passes the House. AOC was the sole vote against. People anticipate a signing today by Trump. Democratic leadership vows that phase four is for reals. This time they mean it. Meanwhile, Trump and McConnell blocked food assistance in this interim bill because. Also, our president is an idiot and is going to get more of us killed. Meanwhile, one in five New Yorkers may have already had COVID-19. And Joe Biden getting the band back together. Now advised by Larry Summers. Donald Trump leverages Postal Service loan to attack its unions. And congratulations, Wisconsin Republican Party and Wisconsin Supreme Court. Wisconsin has at least 19 cases of COVID-19 tied to that election they insisted on holding. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Glad you could be with us today. We're going to do the plugs and notices on Monday. This morning, I did a pre-recorded interview with Michael Olmsted. He is the one of the top epidemiologists, I think, in the country. You may have seen his interview with Joe Rogan about a month ago, almost. He, in 2017, essentially wrote the book on anticipating a anticipating the pandemic that we have now. Didn't know exactly what it was going to be. Obviously, he's been warning the country since 2005. It's fascinating. We will play this. Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. But it got me very angry about the failure of leadership we have in this country and to realize how serious it is. It got me angry because of all the obvious things that we can see. But, you know, one of the things, and, you know, this is spoiler alert, I guess. I asked him, like, what on a practical level, like, what should we be doing? Like, what are the principles that we should be following? Like, obviously people say, you know, wash your hands, don't touch your face. According to him, which is also very similar to what, and his name escapes me now because I'm working on no sleep. But the, Brendan, what was the name of the doctor that we had on from New Orleans? Can't remember his name now either, but he was He's an epidemiologist. Say again.
I'll get it in a second.
Okay. Epidemiologist from New Orleans. And he said something similar. The key seems to really be about the aerosolization. It's the air. And if you, it's not clear why in some instances, some people project more aerosolization of the virus than others. But the real key, and I'm just telling you this, folks, this, because I found it really to be helpful to hear something definitive about it. Certainly, you know, good to wash your hands, good to be careful of what other people have touched. But the overwhelming majority of infections come from air. And in some instances, I think certainly beyond 6 feet away. He said to me, he said, you know, when you see sun streaming through your window and you see stuff floating and you think, oh, it's really dusty in here. In fact, no, that's the aerosolization. It is, I mean, it's smaller than droplets. It's like if you have a vaporizer in your house. And, but stuff like, you know, I said, well, what if somebody was like driving my car and for like half an hour and they had it, but I wasn't in the car. Would it be helpful for me to, you know, air it out for 10 minutes, open the doors and let it, oh yeah, definitely. And it's so obvious to him, but I'm like, you know, we should have, there should be some man or woman, like, I don't know, a president who, you know, gets in front of the country and say, like, here's some broad principles. Airing stuff out is good. Staying 6, 7, 8 feet away is good. Being not in enclosed spaces, you know, if you're out on your porch or your stairs or you're, you know, on the street talking to a friend and they're 10 feet away, that's much better than being in a room 10 feet away. Like these basic principles, we just don't hear because we have an idiot, a malignant idiot as our president. A narcissistic, malignant idiot who is firing people. I mentioned this, I think it was on Wednesday, right? About the that guy, Rick Bright, who was part of BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. He was at the CDC for a decade. Since 2010, he has worked at BARDA. He was fired because he was, here's what he said in a statement yesterday. He was fired in particular because he insisted that hydroxychloroquine must be tested rigorously before anybody goes and recommends it. And so he was fired by the president. Now, of course, the FDA announced today that people should be very careful about it and probably not take it, except for under very sort of narrow circumstances. But this is the problem that we have. And this is what this epidemiologist was basically talking about. Like he's, you know, more or less like the facts are the facts. And what we need is some type of leadership in this country to help the country figure out what the broad principles are that will protect us and try and, we're not going to live a normal life, but we also can't stay in the situation that we're in now for the 18 months until we get a vaccine. And that it really should be the 18 months if we get a vaccine. There's only two ways out of this. One is a vaccine. The other is 60 to 70% of the country get it. And then it will start to diminish. But you can't go out and try and get it. Because if you do, you will overrun the capacity of our medical system. And the number of people who will die will be exponentially greater. I mean, we're 50,000 people dead now. and we've been in this a month. You do the math. We're probably looking at the end of this, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are probably going to die from this. And there's really no, mitigating that. You can mitigate, is it going to be maybe 300,000 or is it going to be 800,000 or is it going to be 2 million? Those things can be changed, but there's going to be a lot of deaths from this. And if you try and just like, we're all going to get sick and then we can end this whole thing, then the deaths are going to be a lot more because we do not have the ability to treat that many people. And people are not going to just die of COVID. They're going to die of a host of other things that can't be treated. So the question is like, how do you both not essentially destroy society by having everybody stay in the situation they're in right now for 18 months, which is a minimum, and it's an if, right? Because you're counting on getting a vaccination then. And how do you not have hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people die in this country? And the answer is somewhere around like find these broad principles that work, have a national discussion about what risks are we willing to assume as a country, what are the upsides and downsides of these risks and whatnot, and then start to try and move forward. We're not having anything close to that conversation. Nowhere. We're spending our time. Well, let's go right into this. This idiot. I know that's not a term of art. But here's this like amazing moron. And there was a piece out today about not just of Trump firing the one of the top infectious disease experts, not just a piece about Trump sidelining the CDC because he doesn't appreciate the fact that they make him look like an idiot. There's a story about how, you know, Trump's really dour these days, guys. And how like guys like Fauci and whatnot are, you know, they're exhausted by having to do this dog and pony show every day for 2 hours. There's a lot more constructive things that Fauci can be doing than being up there and having to not laugh or cry when Donald Trump speaks. Here's Donald Trump trying to impress people. That's what's going on here. He is trying to impress people, and he is so just out of his mind with a self-assessment that it has just occurred to him that, wait a second, if disinfectant or ultraviolet light can kill a virus on a surface, what about if we use that on human beings? Think about it.
Brian. Thank you very much. So I have a question that probably some of you are thinking of if you're totally into that world, which I find to be very interesting. So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
Get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept of the light, the way it kills it in 1 minute, that's pretty powerful.
I mean, this is, and for people who have young children, you've seen this before. on some level where a child recounts a conversation that they've had with somebody because they want to sort of impress you. I told mommy that that I'm going to go to the bathroom after I and then I'm going to wash my hands. Do I get a cookie? That's what he's doing. He's trying. He thinks he's onto something that is so unique and special and brilliant that he wants to make sure that everybody knows. It's on record. I was the one who gave them this idea about, you know, the disinfectant, and maybe you could, there's a way to wash out the lungs with disinfectant or something, or like shine the light really bright on the flesh. Like, I just, that's what I said. They're going to check it out, but it was my idea, everybody. So just want that on the record. Thank you. I mean, this would be hilarious if it wasn't for the fact that this is the president of the United States. It's the president of the United States. And forget the president of the United States. It's the guy who's, he's the guy who's in charge that we're all looking for to exercise some leadership in this instance. We're so screwed. We're so screwed. And with that, auspicious intro. Do we have Emma on the line?
1 second.
Okay. I'm in a bad mood today, folks. Watch that guy, just how stupid he is. And I mean, there's, you know, I will obviously continue to criticize the Democrats and Joe Biden and bringing in Larry Summers, which is not going to be helpful, I think, in terms of how we will recover from the economic shock of this. But this failure is just, it's of epic proportions. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program. What is your official title over at TYT? Are you correspondent?
National correspondent. National. Yes, national.
The premier national correspondent for the Young Turks.
Did I just jump in at the right time? I don't even know how the Zoom stuff works anymore.
No, that was perfect. Okay. And I apologize because I just basically just, the combination of talking to, I did a pre-tape of an epidemiologist this morning, combination of talking to that guy and then seeing the president of the United States, you know, sort of like humble brag that he had come up with the idea. And he told the other people about, you know, I'm not a doctor, but it just occurs to me that
UV light in your lung,
or some Lysol.
We're good.
The manufacturer of Lysol had to come out and say, please don't take this internally.
I saw that this morning. It's unbelievable.
We are so effed. Like, I mean, after talking to this epidemiologist, basically, like, look, there's certain immovable aspects of the virus, but our response, of course, to this has a fairly wide range of possibilities in terms of the way that we go about our lives. But the first thing you need is like one central source, which people trust, who's getting out, you know, who's like introducing the broad principles and the questions as to what we face. And we don't have that.
Well, certainly not. And I covered this yesterday, as is with any mass disaster, there are conspiracy theories coming out, and there's this guy who seems to have replaced Alex Jones in the YouTube space, had like 6.6 million views yesterday. This interview with this doctor who said Dr. Fauci himself created the coronavirus and that he's in cahoots with the Chinese government. And, you know, they were kind of part of the fire Fauci crowd. They were saying that's the bare minimum that should happen to him. And Trump retweeted a tweet saying that we should fire Fauci. I mean, he kind of, he's winking and nodding to those conspiracy theorists and making it so he's the ultimate source of information when he's basically telling everyone to put bleach in their lungs.
To be fair, That guy Pollock from Breitbart fact checked that, and he did not say put bleach in the lungs.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
He
thanks.
He said
thanks for quick
it
fact
was
check.
An idea, and obviously it needs to be checked out by the medical by the doctors to see if you can put bleach in your lungs.
Again, I mean, I know this exercise gets trite at some point, but imagine if Obama went on. On the at the White House, was at the podium and talked about, you know, wild medical theories about putting cleaning products in your body.
I mean, honestly, after that, you sort of feel like I can understand why Fauci and well, let's play this clip because I sort of feel like I understand why Fauci just sits up there and, you know, tries to just hide all emotion. And Burks, you know,
yeah.
I imagine a similar dynamic. Who knows? Maybe they have different, you know, abilities to how far they'll go or what they are actually feeling. But I do feel like the rest of them that enable Trump, who are not essential to getting us, you know, to dealing with this, like the not like, you know, like the Republicans in the Senate, let's say, and just about any other staffers in the White House, they all should be on trial after this. I mean, honestly, they all should be on trial as far as I'm concerned. They should be there should be some national version of Nuremberg, and they should all be on trial for allowing this stuff to happen. Here is here's Dr. Birx. I imagine you've seen this video, but it is when Trump is going in and on about his, we can wash the lungs with Lysol and we can have super ultraviolet light, like ultraviolet light, I guess, that would permeate our flesh and then clean it in just a minute. And here, somebody zoomed in on Deborah Birx and you can see the expression on her face. And this is like, it is funny and horrific. Here it is.
So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that, too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks to put.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in
that.
A minute.
He's having a panic attack.
And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. So fortunately, they're going to use medical doctors.
Fortunately, as opposed to the fake doctors that he likes to listen to on Fox and Friends and
right,
the Oz's and the Phils.
Could be like, you know, Doctor of Jazz or something like that, or, you know, so I don't know.
Doctor of History.
But she's sitting there and it looks like she's having a panic attack. Like she's sitting there, like you can, at one point she looks down and has to like, just like breathe, like literally there's like an internal, you know, therapist just saying, breathe, make sure you breathe. And he is, and the problem is though, is that there's nobody to stop this. And we're in the middle of a crisis. This is not going to end. This is, you know, it's hitting, you know, rural areas across the country, but this doesn't end. This does not end.
Yeah. I think when you're in that kind of social situation and it's Trump, what are you going to do? I mean, you would be gone in a second if you challenge him, but then you wouldn't be able to provide the information necessary. And there would just be sycophants up there. I don't envy the positions of the doctors that have to stand up there with him.
All right, let's move to, I don't know what else there is to say about this. I mean, we have no, there doesn't seem to be any type of plan. We have 50,000 dead in New York. We are, you know, we have managed at least to flatten the curve enough everywhere that we haven't overrun our healthcare system. But beyond that, we're in exactly the same place we were 6 weeks ago.
So, Sam, I'm curious, what was your take on the numbers yesterday that Cuomo released? Because I thought that they were pretty staggering in terms of that sample size of 3,000 supermarket workers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Just how 21% of the ones tested in New York City had the antibodies. So that's 1.7 million people if you multiply it. But who knows if that's a representative sample, but it's certainly higher than, much higher, multiples higher than the 250K cases that are recorded, confirmed.
In fact, I spoke to an epidemiologist today, this morning. It's not something I do every day,
right?
I should just say, for interview. And his perspective on that is that sample is not a great sample to take to get these to extrapolate those numbers, but he does think it's probably close to 15% in New York. In his mind, it's anywhere from 5 to 15% across the country. You know, no matter where you are, it's probably around 5%. Even if you're in a rural area, 5%, maybe a little bit less. 15% would be the high end in New York. And that's great, except for it doesn't matter until we get to 60 or 70%. And in terms of herd immunity. So if you're talking about New York, you know, this is, you can easily do a back of the envelope figure on this. If you get 50, you know, if you get whatever it is in New York at this point, like 15 something thousand deaths, with 15%, well, you multiply that times 6, and that's what you would end up at the end of it with in New York. And presumably, that's if you can make sure that you're protecting the most vulnerable, who are most susceptible to dying, and it also makes sure that you're able to amortize those deaths out and those illnesses out and those infections out so that nothing overwhelms the medical system. But the threshold for overwhelming the medical system in other states and in other in municipalities and rural areas is probably lower. And so you need to flatten it even more there in some respects to get to that 60 or 70%. And he said, like, it's, you know, if you can get to a vaccine in 18 months, which is an if, that's a better scenario than trying to get to 60 or 70%, because we may not be able to get to 60 or 70% without overwhelming our healthcare system. And when we overcame, you know, it's one thing to say, like, I'm not going to get any, you know, elective surgeries for a 3 week period, or we're able to, you know, pull back on certain, you know, semi-elective surgeries. But if that's the case for over, you know, 18 months through the, what will be the normal flu epidemic that we get each year, probably less because people are staying home, but it would still be elevated numbers. I mean, that's the problem. So give me 1 second. I want to just read this ad. I did not see it before, but I'm pretty excited about this, actually. This is one of the few times where we get an ad. I mean, it happens. But there are times where I am very excited about getting an ad, and this is one of them. I have interviewed the director of this program months ago on Ring of Fire, and this ad is a warning. Our democracy is under attack from the U.S. Supreme Court. In the middle of a deadly global pandemic, people across Wisconsin were planning on voting absentee to keep themselves and their families safe. But the night before the election, 5 Republican justices on the Supreme Court told thousands of people they have to choose between risking their lives and forfeiting their right to vote. Well, we just announced today 19 people at least were infected on that day. This Supreme Court favoring Republican interests over our democracy is nothing new. They gutted the Voting Rights Act. They invited billionaires and corporations to spend unlimited amounts trying to influence elections. They gave a green light to gerrymandering, voter ID laws, voter roll purges. Now a progressive movement is rising up to fight back because it's quite possible the Wisconsin case won't be the last 2020 showdown over voting rights to be settled in the courts. We simply cannot trust this court to put aside partisan views and protect people's right to vote. Our courts are becoming too political. It's time to say enough. Learn about how you can join the fight by visiting demandjustice.org/majority. That's demandjustice.org/majority. This is a great organization, folks. And I think you've probably heard me mention them on this program. The ED of this was in the Obama administration. Do you know this group, Brian Fallon's group?
No, I don't, but it sounds incredible.
It's the first time, and he was in the Obama administration, and when it was over, he said, we screwed up. We screwed up in a myriad of different ways, and he, in particular, felt that we had screwed up in terms of justices, and he has come out and said publicly, the idea that he has is no corporate lawyers as justices on any of the federal courts.
And well, there you go.
This is an organization that, like, when we talk about who might have access to Joe Biden if he is the president, and how we can push a better agenda, this is the type of guy who whose organization could get a seat at the table and could have a list to give Joe Biden, like the Heritage Foundation and the Federalist Society gave Donald Trump. Excellent organization. Check that out. demandjustice.org/majority. And Ellie Mistel mentioned them in our interview with him a couple of weeks ago. So people should check that out. So Emma, unfortunately, we don't have anything near like that on the legislative side. Give me your take on what's happening with this. We have this interim small business loan deal. We need it. It should be uncapped as far as I'm concerned. There's no reason not to keep putting money out there. We could use tighter controls on it as to who gets it. But your perspective on what's happening with the Democrats. I mean, the bill passed in the House. It's going to be signed today. AOC was the only person who basically said, I'm against it. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, they got nothing in the Senate. They got funding for hospitals. They got funding for testing. That should be pretty bare minimum when we're in a pandemic. And then I understand what you're saying about how the small business program should be uncapped, but you know we're seeing how it's been abused as well, and the Democrats didn't get any regulations about how maybe we could be a little bit more judicious about what constitutes a small business, aka not Harvard with its $40 billion endowment, aka not Shake Shack, whatever. There was none of that. There was no discussions of that. I understand that there's rumblings about a second payment, but I would have wanted to tie that immediately to this bill. And I think it's great that AOC is standing up against it. You know, I heard all the time in 2016 that if Trump got elected, that the Democrats would become stronger and more progressive and not back down. They're somehow weaker and more pathetic under Donald Trump in the middle of a pandemic, and we have Joe Biden as the nominee. So that theory sucked. But also goes to show how deep and institutional the weakness, the kind of conciliatory attitude towards corporations are, and the inability to effectively fight against Republicans is. That's going to take time. It certainly didn't help that Trump became president, didn't help the progressive movement, I don't think, in the substantive way that would have offset the harm that he's done.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, and frankly, you know, I lived through Ronald Reagan and more or less three terms of that. George Herbert Walker Bush, in many respects, was an extension of that. And we got Bill Clinton. lived through, you know, the George Bush Jr. for 8 years and a massive financial crisis. And we got Barack Obama. There was no way we were going to do better than Barack Obama. Look, it was close. But the way that frankly, you know, and it's not just the Democratic establishment. It's the Democratic, it's people who, the way that they respond to a crisis of a right-wing presidency like this is to basically say, we just want out. Right. And we don't, and whatever's going to get us out. And
they cry uncle very quickly. Yeah. Not Uncle Joe so much, but.
Exactly. No. And this is, and what we're seeing with the Democrats now at best is we're just going to step on the sidelines and let Donald Trump, don't interfere when your enemy is doing themselves a disservice, essentially. But the problem is, on top of that, there is also and Pelosi sort of showed this. And, you know, I got a couple of emails of criticizing her earlier in the week for that horrible moment where she was on with her freezer in the ice cream, mm-hmm. which I just found just to be the most oblivious, I mean, beyond obliviousness to do that in the context of a pandemic. But first of all, they should be back in Washington. There is no reason why the guy or the girl or the woman who is working Instacart is an essential service and our Congress people are not. That's just not, that doesn't, I'm sorry. We have an absence of leadership in the White House. Our Congress people should be in Congress doing their effing job. They should be doing oversight. They should be trying to figure this shit out so that we don't have to rely on a guy who's literally telling people, like, I'm not saying it's a cure, but I just want everybody to know I came up with the idea. Maybe bleach your lungs.
Like, yeah. Well, I was on a podcast with Dr. Jason Johnson, and we got into a debate about Biden's visibility and how Biden has not been on television. I obviously think that's some sort of calculated move by his team because he struggles. But also how I think it's really disastrous because the number one thing you need to be right now is visible. And to your point, the Democrats aren't being visible in any way. Oh, COBRA loans. Oh, little tweaks around the edges. And Trump signing checks with his name. And it appears to the layman, to regular people, like Trump's the one cutting checks and the Democrats are nowhere except Andrew Cuomo, who's on TV every day.
Well, there's two different issues. One is the political one, where it's like, yes, you're allowing him to dominate everything. And their theory is, well, if we just lay low, then he's going to have enough rope to hang himself. Maybe that'll work. Maybe it won't. But the COBRA thing is worse than that. That is not just anemic. That is them terrified at the idea of any real structural change coming out of this. And the fact of the matter is that first stimulus bill was a structural change. You know, the Republicans, they don't talk about structural change. They just do it. When they go in and they say, we're going to starve states and we're going to impose austerity and we're going to get rid of all these agencies. It was a structural change when you decided to get rid of the entire pandemic apparatus in the government. That's a structural change. There's a whole host of structural changes that they're imposing. When you decide that we're going to give free license for the Fed to essentially print money for corporations, you're making a structural change in society. You're changing the complete structure of our economy. And the Democrats are so afraid, or just, it's just not their political agenda to have any type of structural change, that they will pour good money after bad into COBRA. And remember, this is Nancy Pelosi was talking about PAYGO. She is a Pete Peterson acolyte. The idea that they would go out and burn money by subsidizing COBRA, which is like if you went into a laboratory and said, what's the most expensive way we could deliver right. health insurance? This is what you would do. The idea that they're going to go burn that money when it would be much cheaper to expand Medicaid, but they're terrified of that actually being a lasting legacy of this. And they're avoiding, they're just deluded in their own way. Like there's going to be some changes and it's either going to be the changes that Mitch McConnell wants or changes that you impose, but there is no middle ground. Things are going to change. It's infuriating.
Yeah, exactly. And if we see around the globe, even before this pandemic, that right-wing populism was winning and the crumbs of neoliberalism were failing, you know, it's part of the trend that they're trying to grasp that kind of marginal centrism changing things slightly for the better all the time. And it's just not, it doesn't play right now in this current political reality, and it's global. And I think to your point, it's so easy, it's so much easier politically to justify tearing things down. Oh, this is ineffective. We're going to, you know, do away with it. We're breaking it down. As opposed to being talented enough politically and a big enough thinker and in touch enough with the American people to think of ideas that would, we could build new things, what's going to play. And that takes a much more talented politician, takes someone who's actually, as I just said, in touch with what Americans want, as opposed to Republicans who bank on people's ignorance of certain programs and are able to just strip things away, fits their agenda, gets rid of necessary tax revenue. So that's part of the burden of being on the left, but we don't have actual leftists making that case. So they're always perpetually losing because they're unable to be politically talented enough to put those programs through.
Yeah, or they don't believe it. I mean, it's one or the other. I mean, it's almost irrelevant.
Well, they're paid to, also not to believe it.
I think that's true. And this is, you know, I think that's a great point, because essentially what the left is arguing in many instances, and, you know, broadly speaking, is we need to have overcapacity to deal with things in our society. We need to have a certain amount of waste in our health insurance system as a means of which to deal with things as they come up and to provide for people. We need to have a certain amount, I mean, and maybe waste is not the right word, but we need overcapacity. You know, when you have a pandemic readiness team sitting on the National Security Council, when you have one at the DHS, when you have people embedded in China from the CDC to look at potential pandemics, on any given year, that could be a waste of money. Like, hey, there's no pandemics this year. We wasted that money. But, you know,
be like Wimbledon. Be like Wimbledon and pay. Did you see that story that they paid $2 million a year for the past 10 years for pandemic insurance, and they got some hundreds of millions of dollars in payout?
I mean, there you go, right?
You know?
I mean, but I mean, it's like any other insurance. You know, I've been using this example as like, you know, you don't hear people say, I had fire insurance for the past 15 years. My house didn't catch on fire. It was a total waste of money. And so it is much harder to sort of to make the argument that we need these things, even if it isn't self-evident right now, much harder to make that argument than there's no pandemic. Why do we have a pandemic readiness apparatus? Let's get rid of it. Let's cut it. And we can see, you know, we talk about the numbers in New York of people who have died. It is by far low income, more low income people, more people, brown people, black people, a function of a lot of different things. Ultimately, many of those things can be, you know, either causally or are heavily correlated with being low income. Yeah. And so the idea is that, you know, the Republicans can make these arguments of we don't need this extra capacity, because when we do need that extra capacity, it is people who are not wealthy who pay the price.
I think it's also a compounding factor too, in why the Republicans are able to get away with it and why Trump's approval rating is hitting highs in some polls. I know it's dipped over the past few weeks, but the fact that that initial Gallup thing where he had 60% approval for his pandemic response and the media was 44%, 16-point gap. You know, they didn't ask specifically about the parties, but I think, damn, I lost my train of thought. I forget where I was initially going with that.
Well,
but
no, it's compounded by the fact that when Republicans structure things to essentially make low-income people bear the price.
Yes, that was the point I was making. Yes,
and it's compounded by the fact because wealthy people then step in and also continue to push for that agenda. And it's I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, as this disease spreads across the country, I think Trump's political fortunes are going to get dimmer and dimmer, frankly. But then there's the other thing of, like, this is not going to go away. If Donald Trump loses, this is not going to go away. Donald Trump's not going to go away. But we actually need a legitimate response to this. And so it's one thing for the Democrats to sit there and say, if we're super quiet, maybe no one will know that we're here and they'll just go out and they'll vote against Donald Trump. And that could be, like I say, an effective political strategy. But the problem is you're not setting up anything to actually respond to these crises. You know, like, time is not on our side with this stuff.
Yeah. There's never a strategy to actually provide an alternate narrative. It's always, as you said earlier, allowing himself to have enough rope to hang himself with it, hoping that he's such a disaster that that's what the American people see too. When, you know, what he's always understood is that it's marketing. And that's my fear about Biden's complete invisibility throughout this.
I agree. I think it's a dangerous gamble, but I don't know that there's much of a choice with Biden.
Right.
Because it's not, I mean, even if they said, like, you know what, he's going to be really active. He's going to get out there. We're going to put on a mask and he's going to go out there and he's going to deliver food and he's going to be talking broadly about, you know, how we need to address it. That's not on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on some level, it's like, okay, Biden, for whatever reason, people chose Biden and he is what he is. I think he could be doing better on, you know, even on his Zoom shows, but there is some internal logic to the idea of, like, we're going to lay low. But, and, you know, just there's, I mean, literally, Politico has a piece out today. An academic journal projects that the death of 65 and older Republican voters in several swing states will far exceed those of Democrats. Like, literally.
I saw that.
And you know what? I mean, this is, yeah, here it is. This is, I mean, I don't know what to say. It's horrible. It's a horrible sort of, like, notion to contemplate that this is, but I'm not terribly surprised. We were saying this when you could watch Sean Hannity for the first 3 or 4 months, like that, or 3 or 4 weeks of this. He's changed his tune, but that mentality is still in the heads of people, particularly in these red states and in swing states of Republican voters. They're still not taking this seriously. They're still, you know, the crisis, as far as they're concerned, is that, you know, my First Amendment rights are being abridged. I can't go to the Daryl Worley concert.
Yeah, which that's a wonderful reference, which is why maybe the Republicans, like, voter suppression has always worked for them in the past, but perhaps they're just being short-sighted by not including the vote by mail funding that I know Kamala Harris was pushing for and other Democrats were pushing for in this latest bill, because a lot of these older people are going to want to vote by mail. And we saw suppression during a pandemic didn't necessarily work out for them in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, you know, tables could be turning in that area. It's impossible to predict. Like, my instincts, if this were a regular election without the pandemic, I think Trump would win re-election, but I don't know. Who knows who will go to the polls? We could see record lows in turnout this time around for many reasons, for both an uninspiring candidate and the inability to vote safely.
Well, I mean, it's hard to predict, like, what the situation is going to be in 3 or 4 weeks, just in terms of, like, the entire country.
Yeah.
I keep referencing this conversation I had this morning, but he basically said in every pandemic, there is basically one dynamic that seems to be the case, and we don't know why. But the second peak is usually worse than the first, and it usually happens 6 months later, and we don't know why. And so we're talking, you know, if we just peaked in April, we're talking the next peak is in October.
The next peak is in a perfectly terrible spot for the election.
And that's, you know, I guess theoretically that's the New York peak. and we're getting these sort of cascading peaks across. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And, and I imagine you're right about this. The dynamic of the election is completely different with this. Here's an example. You know, Doug Henwood,
mm-hmm.
of course, I think, our audience very familiar with Doug Henwood. He has been, when I think of, like, you know, socialists or radicals that I, you know, politically radical that,
right.
that I've been aware of for years. You know, I used to read the Left Business Observer 15 years ago. Listen to his radio shows. He wrote apparently on Facebook, "I've been hating on the Democratic Party in public for almost 35 years, in private for longer than that. But I have to say, and I don't see how anyone could deny this, if a Democrat were president now, there just wouldn't be anywhere near as many dead and doomed people. The CDC might not have been richly funded, but it certainly wouldn't have been eviscerated, with talented people not wanting to go anywhere near it. The pandemic task forces wouldn't have been disbanded and probably would have been listened to fairly early on. Given the choice between neoliberal technocrats and proudly ignorant yahoos, I'm going to have to go with the former. I'm not going to stop agitating for a world where we could have better choices. But as long as it's a forced binary, as they say in the polling business, it's an easy answer. Sorry if this disturbs anyone. Sort of disturbs me, but you have to be honest with self and others." And I, you know, I don't know how you argue with that. And
that's my take. That's my take too, you know.
And I think that's the sentiment that a lot of people are going to have. And I think that we're going to see more of those numbers as we get closer to the election. But again, the next question is like, what are the Democrats doing? Like, is there really a calculus that if we put more people on Medicaid in this crisis and pandemic, that we're going to lose votes? I mean, who is the insurance company that's going to pour all this money into, you know, reelect Donald Trump because he's dealing with the pandemic so well?
But look, I mean, he doesn't need a ton of money. We saw he had way less money in 2016, and he has the incumbency. He has the advantage of both being an incumbent and also appearing like an outsider, which I don't want to underestimate.
I saw a stat the other day that if Joe Biden raised $1 million more than Trump every day, starting 3 days ago, he still would not have more money than Donald Trump. Donald Trump already has a massive war chest.
And Biden's already having trouble. There are articles that he's having trouble. Yep. So
Hopefully he won't need the money. I mean, the upshot is that there's not going to be any field work. There's not going to be
right.
Get out the vote. The get out the vote is going to be, you know, I think what we're going to see is something very similar to potentially the dynamic that we saw in Wisconsin, which is that people are just like really, really angry at Donald Trump and the Republicans. And we'll see. In the meantime, people should be pressuring Nancy Pelosi. She came out, I don't know if you saw this. There was a story that came out in the Washington Post the other day. And I know you got to go in a minute, but we will do that in a moment. But there was a piece that came out in the Washington Post the other day where she said, "No more Mr. Nice Guy for me." And I'm convinced that is her realizing that they screwed up with this ice cream thing, that there is a lack of patience from Democrats. Like, this is on Trump. This is on the Republicans.
Right.
And the Democrats' failure to, like, even in any way push back on some type of false narrative is not enough of a justification for them to go after nothing and to use none of their leverage. It's just not going to work. So supposedly in this next round, phase four, and we're starting to hear more like from the Squad and the Progressive Caucus, they're going to go for things like voter protection. They're going to go for things like, you know, automatic economic stabilizers, because if there is a Republican controlled Senate and Joe Biden's president in February of 2021 and unemployment is still at like whatever, 15-20%, Mitch McConnell is going to say, "We're not giving any more funds."
Yep.
And in fact, I think that's what he was doing this week when he said, "We got to start worrying about the deficit." That is just all so that he has justification in the event that there's a Democratic president I've been saying this for 6 to 8 months. I've been saying this for a year. We need to watch out for the deficit. So people really need to pressure, I think, their congresspeople. They should be getting back to work. They should be in Washington, D.C. They can socially distance there. They can be an example for the rest of the country. But who is more essential in a pandemic than the leaders of the country?
When you're right, you're right.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
there you
for
go.
That.
You're welcome.
Emma, where can folks check you out? You're putting out some videos right on 2IT.
Yeah, so youtube.com/RebelHQ, facebook.com/RebelHQ. Follow me on Twitter. That's where I'm my best. Right now I'm just hunkering down. I miss New York. I mean, I've been out, you know, with my parents kind of outside of the city. So it's been bizarre, but you know, whatever.
How many fights a day do you get in with your parents?
You know, not as many as I thought. More with my sister, to be honest with you.
Oh, you're fighting a lot with your sister?
Well, just over Biden, yes.
Over Biden?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit debates about, you know, it's irresponsible for me to be talking about Joe Biden like this, for example, criticizing him. I'm like, that's not my job. I got to be honest. So things like that.
Well, who does she think that you're revealing anything to?
I don't know.
All right.
She's great. She's lovely, but a little more true blue than perhaps me.
All right. Well, I get a side with you on this, Emma. So I'm sorry to your sister, but
hey, no worries.
There's room for every opinion here. Appreciate it. Emma Bigland, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you later. Emma, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks guys. Appreciate Bye. It.
All right, folks, we're going to do, are we going to take a break, or we should just have this guy on, right? Or what can we, I guess we just got to bring him on. Is that right? Matt? Is anybody here?
I'm here, but I figured this is a question for Matt. But
I was muted on the wrong thing.
Just roll it.
I think we have to just roll him in, yeah.
All right. Well, I have no idea what to expect, ladies and gentlemen. I never do from this guy.
Good thing we got a delay on the YouTube.
Oh, that's right. Okay, good. Well, let's we got a delay on the YouTube. That's probably going to be necessary. Let's bring in David Feldman. He is the proprietor of the David Feldman Show, which can be heard on various outlets. David. Are you okay?
He's still connected.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm just looking at his profile picture. That was him. Oh, boy. Yeah, I actually thought that was him. I saw his profile picture and I thought, no, he's really seems to be upset. And
looks like he's here. He just needs to unmute.
All right. Well, we got maybe we can. Is there any way that we can? He's not using his video. He's got to click on his video down at the bottom. There we go. This is what he means. I use technology from way back, I think, is the way that he starts this. But we'll let him try and figure that out. Find his camera. Oh, there he is. And now I can't hear anything from him. Can you guys hear anything?
I cannot, no.
No, but he's got a nice setup. It
looks like. Yeah, it's a good setup.
You get a very nice setup. You get a
the visual's microphone. Great.
Yeah. He's on. He doesn't know how to do it.
Hit the... is there...
This is a bit.
David, can you hear us? Do you want to touch your ear if you can hear us? I guess he can't hear us. David? I think we heard you.
I'm trying to...
Okay, now we got you.
Well, no, hang on. I'm trying to get this set up.
Well, we hear you.
Your chloroquine and the Clorox. Stanley Tucci came over. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, okay, I've been... hang on, I'm just cleansing.
Wait, you're not drinking the Clorox, are you, David?
No. It's a hydrochloroquine cocktail that Stanley Tucci made for me on Twitter.
Stanley Tucci made it for you on Twitter?
Very sexy when he makes it, and it just cleans the whole system.
You're not actually using any type of product like that.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm feeling fine. I switched to a spray tan, from a spray tan to UVA coating. That's one of the things that I'm doing.
I see.
And also, you know, wearing a mask and the sequin glove and screaming Shimoni as I moonwalk, because I'm going for the whole thing. Screaming.
Great.
How are you? It's good to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you, David. Is it... I see that they've turned off the heat in your house. Is that why you're wearing a stocking cap?
Well, a lot of people are away at their homes in the Hamptons, so I'm just making sure that their jewelry is safe.
See, are you? Oh, so you're not even in your own home. You've broken into someone else's house.
I go to people's homes and just make sure their valuables are safely put away. So.
This is your the costume. You go as LeBeau, right? From Hogan's Heroes.
From Hogan's Heroes. Yeah. LeBeau. But, I think I had this a month ago.
You think you had the hat?
The whole thing that's going on. I think I had it way back, like 2 months ago, sitting around watching CNN, tipping the guy from Seamless 40%, not going outside, being really depressed. I think I had it 2 years ago. I caught myself tipping the Seamless guy 40% back then too. So
wait, I don't understand. What does the tipping have to do with
this thing that I find myself doing now? You know, being grateful to the guy from Seamless.
Oh, I see. So every time you tip, you attribute it to maybe having COVID.
I don't know about that. I'm just talking about this. Maybe it's COVID. Just find myself just tipping a lot lately.
Oh, that's great. It's also making up for a lot of the time I understand that you didn't really tip very much in the past. David, let me get your take your pulse here in terms of the politics of what's going on. What's your sense of? I don't really think it's responsible for you to drink that on camera.
Well, you know, I'm a Bernie bro from way back.
Right.
You know,
I knew that. Yes.
Yeah. I marched with King, Alan King. He was a great liberal comedian. And
Alan King was not a particular, was he a liberal?
He was pretty, he was liberal. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He was for global trade.
Right. Okay.
Alan King. I marched with Malcolm Gladwell, and I just think that I can't in good conscience, because I just can't in good conscience vote for Joe Biden.
You can't?
No. And not just because of my participation in the Green River slangs in the 1990s. That does affect some of my conscience, but I'm a Bernie bro, and it's just going to be very difficult. I'm just not going to give my heart to Joe Biden unless I get some assurances.
What kind of assurances do you need?
I want him to protect the environment. I think I'm worried that he's going to stop fracking. I think that's a good gateway to solar. And
you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. I haven't been outside for 5 weeks.
Yeah, no, I understand. Now, have you not actually literally gone outside?
I have not gone outside for 5 weeks.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
I'm going to be totally honest with you.
Now, why is that? I mean, are you just like, you refuse to go outside? Like, you step outside? You don't want to step outside?
I'm in Manhattan. I'm like, it's like, and I don't want to overwhelm the hospitals because I'm a bit of a hypochondriac.
Right.
Okay. And it's really bad here in Manhattan. I know. And I don't want to overwhelm the system. I'm two blocks away from a major hospital, and the ambulances, you can hear the sirens at 4 a.m. You know, last night I called to, you know, the hospital to have them turn down the sirens because it's keeping me up. And they left me on hold for about 50 minutes. And then when I got somebody from the hospital on the phone to tell them to turn down the sirens, we were disconnected. So the system is just breaking down completely.
I am just really flummoxed by the idea that they would need a siren at 4 a.m.
Exactly. It's showboating. Right. It's showboating. It's, hey, look at me. I'm important. I'm saving lives. I'm a first responder. Wake up, everybody. Well, what about David Feldman, who has to get some sleep so he can do the majority report with Sam Cedar?
No,
what about
you us? Told me you were very tired, too.
I'm very tired. I'm very depressed. I'm an empath, Sam. I take these things personally. And, you know, turn the sirens down. And it's 7 o'clock every night. Excuse me. Hang on. At 7 o'clock every night, they're cheering for the doctors and the nurses, and dial it back a little. It doesn't have to be that loud.
Right. And now, do your windows open? I mean, have you had any fresh air at all?
No, no, no.
Your windows do not open.
No.
You're in one of those buildings where the windows don't open.
Yeah. You know, and everybody talks about the, you know, the first responders. Mm. What about people like me, the non-essentials, or as I call them, the last responders, who are doing their part? I'm doing my part. I'm staying out of the way. I'm not walking outside. I'm going to have PTSD in a couple of years. This is bad. This is bad. We are not, I'm already watching The Crown for the third time, all 3 seasons in the past week. You would think they knew this pandemic was coming, Sam. You'd think Netflix would have stockpiled some more Ozarks, some BoJack Horsemans. Right.
Nothing.
No,
I thought they had actually released more Ozarks, but I want to get to this point that you made about the first responders. There is no way they could be first responders without people like you, because they would just be responders.
Exactly.
If there was no secondary responders, they couldn't be first.
Uh-huh.
They would just be responders.
Nothing, but nobody thanks us. Right. All we hear about is there are not enough masks and gloves. You think there would be a strategic reserve of Shaw's of Sunset for me to watch?
Well, it's interesting that you talk about going out, because Donald Trump was asked, and I want you to comment on this. Donald Trump was asked, what will the government do if there is an ebb in the summer, which is conceivable? Although there's no sort of like substantive reason to believe this, you know, the flu virus apparently ebbs in the summer, but it's not clear that the coronavirus will. But if there is an ebb in this in the summer, Donald Trump has asked, what will the government do with that time? And here is his response.
Thanks, Mr. President. If there is a summer ebb with this virus, what would the federal government need to do to take advantage of that time?
Say it at the beginning, what?
Oh, so if there is a summer sort of ebb with this virus, what would the federal government need to do to take advantage of that time to be better prepared for a possible resurgence in the fall than we were the first time?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I think a lot of people are going to go outside all of a sudden. People that didn't want to go outside, they'll be going. This was a very interesting meeting. We covered it in great detail, and these are incredible people at that. We could call it a laboratory, because that's essentially what it is. It's a super laboratory. It's a lot of things going on at that laboratory.
Right.
A lot of very.
He's now, good. David, that guy's good.
He's today, like yesterday, it seemed like he was putting on his thoughtful, I'm going to appreciate the process perspective on things. Right. Where he was like, you know, playful about, you know, coming up with like, maybe we should wash our lungs with Clorox bleach or something like that. I'm not a doctor, so I'm just throwing it out there for the doctors. But I was the one who came up with that idea, just in case it does work. And then he's talking about like, we just had like a real spitball session with all the experts. And how are we going to take advantage of an ebb? People are going to go outside. I know people are going to be very excited about it. Like you, right?
I'm going to go outside.
Sure.
I'm planning. I'm planning on it. Yeah. Nobody's in charge, Sam. This is apparent that it's everybody for themselves.
Yeah, but isn't that like a writer's room? You've been in a lot of comedy writer's room. Doesn't he have a feel like he's been in like a writer's room? Like, but they're all doctors and they're just throwing ideas around.
How long is this going to last, Sam? Seriously, what do you hear? You speak to
well, real this people. Between you and I, it seems like it's going to be a long, like it's been a long time.
How long does this last? When can we, I can't, you know, I'm not shaking hands anymore. I'm not spitting into people's mouth anymore. There's all the great pleasures of my life have ended. When do we go outside?
I've
does
got
this
some
end?
News about the way that people were reacting to that. And now it's probably as good a time as any to clue you in on what people were saying about your behavior. In terms of the spitting in people's mouths and the way that you shake hands.
That's the way I was raised.
I mentioned to Emma, I interviewed an epidemiologist this morning, and we're going to play that next week. But I think he's described this as being in the second inning of a 9-inning baseball game.
Mm.
Or a softball game.
And it's the Mets playing.
And, it could end up being like 0-0 after 9 innings, and it could go 10.
Right.
But, yes, I think we're at the beginning of the – I think we're at the end of the beginning.
Right. And is there any faith that you have that maybe – not in Trump, but maybe that he didn't screw up as badly? Do you have this urge to kind of say maybe it's not as bad – in Washington, or is
I
it
think
just
I think it's actually probably worse because it doesn't even seem like there is a conversation that's happening about that there has been no acceptance of the reality of this. And the reality of this is that the virus is exactly like it was 2 or 3 months ago. The only thing that we have been able to do up to this point is to slow down its contagious slow it down as a contagion to just get under the capacity of our medical system,
right?
And that's the best that we can do,
right?
But we can't live like this for 18 months. And so, you know, his argument is we need to have a conversation where there's understanding of, like, you know, where the limits are and how we can sort of, like, in a creative way. He was saying that, like, he is, as an example, maybe we can play baseball, but just nobody in the stands. And you can spread out the camera people in such a way that it's fairly safe for them. Maybe you will have the testing capacity to test, like, the baseball players, and we can stay on top of that. Keep them distanced enough. Maybe they're, you know, you do something slightly different than with the dugouts and whatnot, but there could be baseball.
It can be comedy. I know that laughter is like coughing. It spreads the virus. But if you book me, I can assure you there'll be no laughter.
Oh, no, without a doubt. I think you would be the safest comedian to be watching in a crowded area possible.
How long do we go without stand-up comedy?
I mean...
Broadway,
stand-up comedy, movies. I think it's going to be a while. I think, you know what would work? Drive-through. Bring back the drive-throughs.
Huh? What's this? What's the deal with socks? You want fries with that? That kind of stand-up. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying drive-throughs.
Drive-through
stand-up. Not drive-through, but drive-ins. Like movie.
Oh, like a drive-in, and people, instead of laugh, they honk the horn.
They stay in the car, and they honk their horns as they, or they put some type of, like, everybody gets a CB with a speaker on it.
It'll be like New Year's Eve when they hand out the horn blowers before midnight, and you're trying to get laughs, and you're like, meh. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So you're pessimistic.
I don't know. What's your theory? I'll take your theory.
I think that, in all honesty, because I always pretend to be the asshole on your show.
What do you mean you pretend?
Well, you know, I play the Biden supporter. In all honesty, I think our life was unsustainable in America, and it this pandemic is the worst thing in our lifetime. And that includes Dax Shepard's podcast. And but it is the worst thing in our lifetime. And what was going on before that was unsustainable. The way we treated each other, the way we spent our time, not just our money, but our time. And I don't know if this country is capable of learning from history. I don't think they allow us. I think there's a system in place where we learn these lessons. And then, you know, somebody like Obama puts the thumb on the scale and gives the nomination to Bernie and
to Biden.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to this country. I don't think we're capable of changing. We're not allowed to change is what I think.
Well, there's going to be some change. The question is like, you know, what is it going to be? You know, I mean, we could come out of this where there's, you know, this is an exaggeration, five companies that function. And, you know, there'll be a smattering of small businesses that come back.
Look at Latin America. We're going to be living in, everybody thinks we're Western Europe. We keep looking to Western Europe, Hitler and Mussolini. Look at Pinochet. Look at Brazil in the 70s. That's the future. Banana Republic, income inequality, police state. Try the veal. try the veal, everybody. But that's what I mean, that's where I see this country. If we're not already there, I don't know. I think that if 80% of this country can't cough up $1,000 for an emergency right now, you've got, do you know that one-fifth of this country has a healthy metabolism? One-fifth. Four-fifths of this country is pre-diabetic, either obese, has hypertension. But we identify, we think we're part of some empire and we're on the receiving end of all the bounty. They've brainwashed into thinking we're part of this. We're not. And I don't know. I don't think we're allowed to change.
Well, I got to tell you, David, it sounds like you're doing great there.
Well, you wanted me radicalized. Your
support of Joe Biden has really, really done a number on you.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to start being the Joe Biden supporter anymore. I'm going to come on here and just tell you what I really think. Because I've been,
It's
laid bare now. It just doesn't pretend. This is why I stopped doing. You remember me when I used to be the fake conservative.
Yes, I do.
And I stopped doing it because it stopped being funny. It stopped being funny. I was doing it during, in the lead up to the first Iraq war.
I remember this actually very vividly in the early 90s, 91, 92.
Yeah. And then when I saw that we were invading Iraq the first time, I thought, F satire, F irony. You know, some people are taking this seriously. I don't like the audience's response. Things are, and I stopped doing that fake conservative because it's just, I don't think it moves the needle at all. I think it reinforces what people already think.
But do you think that's the case? I mean, I guess maybe I saw you in the basement in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I think everybody got that it was satire for the most
part. Yeah, but that was my abattoir. And
right.
People were bleeding in that bit. Yeah. I think if you look at A Modest Proposal, Jonathan Swift, Eat the Irish Babies, you know, after that, there was more famine in Ireland. It wasn't as though Jonathan Swift taught Great Britain a lesson and they started caring about the Irish. You know, the war in Iraq continued
right
with John Stewart and Bill Maher clenching their I'm not so sure satire is as valuable as just saying what you really mean. Like I kind of like right now I was going to come on and pretend to be a Joe Biden supporter and
right.
do what I did before. It's not funny to be that asshole. Right? I
don't know. I found it funny, but this is, you know, another look from you. I mean, I get what you're saying. That I'm not convinced, but I'm also not convinced that either thing works. That you can measure the efficacy of either. I mean, look, mm-hmm. I left comedy largely for that. You know, at least in part for that reason. That I just did not feel comfortable, particularly during the Bush years. I just did not feel comfortable, sort of. Jumping over some of the specifics, I guess it were, to land the joke.
Right.
Like, I got too caught up in the specifics and I was like, except for, and then I would describe away the joke.
By the way, this is a real moment. This is an actual real moment because I had...
We're going to limit it.
Okay. But I prepared my, I'm voting, you know, I'm a Bernie bro guy. And I had all this stuff prepared.
All right, and, well, maybe we'll do that later in the week.
Nah, I'm. But you know what the thing about comedy is? It's the audiences that, and I'm being serious, they ruin good comedy. Good comedy, and you see this, you see television laid bare, you see the writing laid bare without the audiences, and you see some people still catering to these rubes. I mean, you're coming to New York City. It's a cultural mecca. And you come to a television, how smart can you possibly be if you're coming to see a television show? Why would you cater to people in a studio audience? They're not the brightest people in the world. So the comedy without an audience and still writing to the rubes who you see in front of you, as opposed to the millions of people at home who are watching, who are much smarter than a studio audience, that's why comedy tends to be so bad. And especially, I mean, there's some great practitioners of stand-up, but when you're constantly catering to people who come to a comedy club, those aren't necessarily the brightest people in the world. So the audience ruins good comedy. That's why I think you stopped doing it, because you can't really, I would travel around the country going, I know people are smarter than this, than what I'm seeing in front of me. They're coming out to a comedy club.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I certainly developed my comedy within a school that had a significant disdain for comedy clubs and comedy as an institution. I mean, that's what we were doing, cross comedy up in Boston. It was all sort of anti-comedy on some level. And there's an argument, too, that like just the mass adoption of television is what made television so bad in terms of the content. But yes, I would agree with this, but I also think that, you know,
where's the critical thinking? I mean, I talk to my kids, every television show is fantastic. Every movie is fantastic. There's so little critical thinking. They turned us and certainly our kids into consumers who just think if it's on TV or if it's in a movie theater, it must be great. And that's what we'll talk about at dinner. What's in your Netflix queue? What are you watching on Hulu? And then you wonder how somebody like Donald Trump seizes power and we can't get rid of him. You know, we need to turn this crap off. And I'm not being, you know, watch stuff like, watch the Majority Report or
watch this segment over and over again.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the large part, I think, well, obviously the people who are watching it are watching this, you know, and, I don't know. I mean,
sports get $60 billion a year in revenue for sports where you watch these guys hit a baseball and we're paying them all this money, and for what? I mean, I think we have to reevaluate. I don't know if we can. I don't know if we're allowed to.
Well, we're allowed to, but I don't know if people are really that psyched to do it. And I don't know. I have gotten less concerned, maybe because I'm not in show business, and it's, you know, even further in my rearview mirror about assessing or judging it, because I don't have to participate in it. Like, I don't really watch that much. I'm not subjected to it. When I, you know, 20 years ago, to do bad comedy was an immoral abomination to me. It was like, it was, you know, I had to have, when I would do sitcom work, it was only as part of a larger plan to, you know, make my own material that I thought was better and not necessarily commercial. And that was the only way I could justify it to myself. Either that or just imagine sitting in a bar in Worcester saying to a guy like, I don't want to get, you know, paid $40,000 a week for the show because I think it's like not funny. And then just imagine what kind of beating I would have taken, like in the face from that person. But I think there's a role for satire. It, you know, I mean, I guess this is the, I remember having conversations like this with Barry Crimmins and in that context, you know, in Boston years and years ago. And I had other comedians who were saying like, you went up there for 10 minutes. You didn't say a single joke. And I'm like, well, I know, but this shit with the, you know, the, that first Iraq war was very troubling to me. And I was like, I'm not going to spend the 10 minutes I have on that stage telling jokes about my grandma when this is all fucked up and nobody's talking about it in the news. But I think everybody has a role within that concentric circle, right? And so that ranges from, I don't know who you want to put into the middle of that circle, but and maybe there isn't actually one middle, but maybe it's an activist, maybe it's an academic, maybe it's a writer. And communicating that message to the to broader and broader segments of the population. And the idea is, you know, find the place in that series of concentric circles where you are most comfortable and your skill set aligns the best to expand that ripple, and know that that ripple diminishes the further it gets out. But if you can maintain the ripple and expand it as much as you can, you find your location on those concentric circles, and then you park there and hopefully, you know, don't think too much about what's happening with the other parts of the circle. You get too sad.
Right. Hey, are people talking on your show about a general strike when it comes to rent, paying student debt, credit cards? Are there calls by any politician that you know of who's saying, don't pay? Like, why are, this is off topic, but why are they using sheriffs to evict people for landlords? Is there any talk of just everybody just no longer paying?
I was hearing something about a general strike for May 1 in terms of work.
Well, that I haven't it's hard heard to much strike. If you're not working, it's hard to go on strike. Right.
And I think it's hard to sort of organize, you know, sort of like a, you know, how does everybody not pay on one day, or, you know, to make it, you know, substantial. But I think I saw something that 1/3 of Americans had missed their rent payments on April 1st. And I think at one point with the way that something like this grows is necessity, and people just skip rent, in May. And I think part of the argument about all of the dynamic in our system is that the state, there is no free market. The state picks winners and losers the moment it sets up the rules of the market, where property is going to be protected more than like someone's right to eat. And so, you know, the sheriff coming and evicting somebody is the sort of the most, I think, one of the closest to on the ground and sort of, you know, narrow examples of what the actual dynamic is. And I think, you know, having people understand that these are all policy decisions. The idea that there are cars and cars and cars and cars of people lining up to get food, that's a decision. That is the decision that we have made as a society. People talk about like, well, let's all go out and kill granny. We just need to make the decision. We're making the decisions right now. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're submerged in some way. We can pay to feed those people. We can. Right. We print money.
Literally. We can't afford all the silverware. That's where it gets really expensive.
Silverware is really expensive.
That's the problem.
No, but we can. These are all choices that we are making as a society, except for it is presented to us as if these are laws of physics. Mm-hmm. And they're not. they are policy decisions. The idea that we're, you know, we didn't have to cap the small bit. We're worried about small business paying people. And we should be clear. The small business loan grant thing is the vast majority of it is to pay the payroll of its workers.
Right.
And we don't need to cap that.
There was a headline in yesterday's Times that said, next tranche of small business loans will only go to small businesses. And I thought, wow, that's nice.
Interesting, yes.
What an interesting idea.
And you know that there are some major corporations out there just like looking around and going like, do you think anybody's going to notice that we got this? Mm-hmm. And apparently Ruth Chris has had to give the money back. But some of the companies that work with Trump's campaign did very, very nicely. And remember, these are grants. You get 10 weeks worth of grants to pay payroll, and money's fungible. So if you paid for payroll for those 10 weeks, theoretically, you know, and I don't think Trump's campaign contractors, I don't think business is bad for them. Business is probably okay for them. In fact, it's probably booming for them.
And you reopen Georgia. People don't come back to work, so they don't have to collect unemployment.
Exactly.
You're fired.
That's exactly it. You're not fired. You decided the business is open. You're not coming in. And
you quit.
And that means you're not eligible for.
Right.
Yeah, that's what's going on, I think, in Georgia to a large extent. I think at one point, people need to become aware that coronavirus is not a political thing, but our response to it is completely a choice. It is completely a policy choice. We could, like many other countries, just say everybody gets the yellow flag and everybody gets 75% of what they were getting before, 80% of what they're getting hauled. Whether you're a bank collecting mortgage, whether you're getting rent, whether you're getting payroll, whether you were getting health insurance, whether you're getting unemployment, whatever it is, we're going to make you whole, or we're going to bring you up to a standard that is X, and that we're going to just pump the money into the economy, mm-hmm. and that's the way it's going to be. We could do that.
We could
AOC
do it.
AOC apparently is calling for a work strike.
And what about not paying your credit cards? What about if everybody said, I'm not paying my credit card debt. I'm not paying my student loans. What happens?
I mean, I think it's one of those situations where everybody's looking to their left and to their right and saying, you know, we all going to jump into this together or not, because I don't want to be the one who's like, you know, in 16 months, oh, I'm being charged all sorts of penalties. I mean,
you know, the government didn't distribute the small business loans. J.P. Morgan Chase did. Bank of America, well, they didn't, actually.
They made $10 billion
yes,
on
yes,
fees.
Yes, yes.
Because we have no apparatus. We have no apparatus to deliver this to anybody. The only apparatus that we had that was pre-existing to deliver money.
The post
money
office.
The post office would be one if we had set it up that way. But the only business, the only apparatus that was set up prior to this to inject money into anybody, essentially, is the Fed giving money to corporations and to banks. That's
right.
It. That's right. The only system that we have that exists to bail out. We have never contemplated, because, you know, if
there
we,
should be, there's talk of the Federal Reserve giving every citizen their own bank account.
Yep.
And so that you would get your tax refunds directly through your Federal Reserve account. Federal Reserve is a bank. Other countries do this. So the, you know, Wall Street says government can't do anything inefficient. Well, what about if the post office goes back to banking? No, we can't compete with the post office. Well, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. Either government is inefficient or government is overwhelming and you can't compete with it. Can't be two things at the same time. So
that was the argument about the public option from insurance companies. It would be unfair to compete against them.
Right, right.
Well, David.
This was a real moment for me.
This was a laugh riot.
Well, you know what? this was valuable for me. It's reminiscent of what I went through 2 decades ago, you know, coming on a show and saying what you don't mean to get laughs. I'd rather come on and talk to you about what
really happened. Wait, was there did you go on like did you ever have an instance like this where it actually mattered? I mean, it's not like this is not, I got news for you. This is not going to hurt your comedy career.
Oh, I can do a good job all by myself. I don't need this show to destroy my comedy. No, I just ended up doing a different type of stand-up.
Did you change your stand-up there? Because I don't remember what...
Yeah. I decided that the jokes... I remember I did Conan, and I was already... This was like when Conan first started.
Yep.
And I realized I want to keep doing Conan. And I decided all the jokes would have to reveal...
Is this when Smigel was on? Yeah. Okay.
That all the jokes would have to reveal something about what a degenerate I am. But I didn't want to, like, take the side of the plutocrats. It just felt so unseemly. So I just stopped doing it. And here with the Biden stuff, and I don't know, the thought of coming on your show and saying, you know, Biden is the man who... that's the problem with the coronavirus, that it hit 3 weeks too late. Had it hit in February, I don't think Obama in good conscience would have put his thumb on the scale for Biden.
It's quite possible. I mean, I remember the last debate before Super Tuesday, you know, lamenting the fact that the Democrats were not talking about this. And Bernie, when it was just his debate with Biden, not making the point that we cannot return to normal. That ship has now sailed. The question is, where do we dock?
Right.
Not are we returning to home port? The question is just like, where do we, where, what foreign land are we docking in?
Right.
Biden
is not FDR.
No, he's not. And
FDR was paralyzed from the waist down. Biden's paralyzed from the neck up. I'm back to being funny again.
There you go. Well, I will say this. It would have been, I frankly feel that Biden's chances to win would have been less without this. I just, you know, I think his failures would have been clearer. What we need now, though, is some type of leadership from the elected Democratic Party. And frankly, no way. Just not happening. That's why Andrew Cuomo is, you know, able to step into this vacuum and look like he's some type of demigod, because, you know, because there's no competition. And Gavin Newsom has decided, like, I'm not going to be an ass about it. I'll let Cuomo be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a complete vacuum of leadership in this country from all quarters.
Yeah.
And it is, I think, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months, it is going to become so dramatically obvious about the relevance of this leadership. I mean, I was talking, saying to Brendan, you know, like back in 2016, from like, the election of Donald Trump, maybe through January into February, almost the theme of almost every interview I would do was like, does it matter if we have a president? You know, like, is the United States government, never mind from a political decisions, but is it a big enough ship that it actually just sort of continues on a trajectory regardless of who is steering it? And we almost got there. We almost got away with it.
Right.
You know,
until the pan, yeah.
7 or 8 months. Maybe he manages to, you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe he would have been reelected. But, you know, no major slip up and, you know, oh, I nuked this country by mistake. Right. I didn't realize. Or, you know, but the reality is that society is complicated. And if there is actually a genuine crisis, and you have a guy who is firing all the key personnel, sidelining the key personnel, forcing the key personnel that he hasn't decided to do that to sit there and suck it up for a couple hours while he starts talking about scrubbing your goddamn lungs with Clorox. We're effed. And somebody in, you know, we're like, we need, I don't know if it needs to be like more people in the media, or if there needs to be, you know, more people have to walk off that podium and just go, hey, folks, what's going on here is a shit show. And so I'm walking out of this room. You want to ask my opinion of it? I'll tell all. I'll be right outside. Like, yeah. Something like that has to start happening on a mass scale. And I think things like, you know, a work stoppage. But, yeah, the idea that, like, guess what? Not paying May's credit card bill. Just not going to do it. Just not going to do it. Where that's what, one, you know, where this is the way that, this is the only way that we as a society can respond. But the fact is that we're not there enough, I think, where people realize, where the people reporting on that wouldn't carry, or like, you know, there has to be a critical mass. And, you know, people being educated that what we're going through is a policy decision, that this is a failure of leadership, both in terms of just like on basic practical level, but also on a political level. And I don't know, maybe we'll get there.
I think we're discovering that for decades, we've thought human life was cheap overseas. We could live with the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people whose lives we destroyed or killed in Iraq, Afghanistan. And we thought that's the price of doing business as an empire. But turns out those same people who made those decisions in Afghanistan and Iraq think the same thing about us. We saw it in Katrina. You know, we're just numbers, collateral damage. Cancel Netflix. Cancel your Hulu and your Amazon Prime. That's what people need to do. Stop with watching this nonsense. Put away these childish opiates and pay attention, because I don't know. I still get people calling me up and saying, what's on your Netflix queue? It's, you know, as Postman said, we've entertained ourselves to death. I think we're there.
Yeah.
I think, for the past 5 years, people have been saying, you know, if we don't do something, it's over. You know, now you dust yourself up, off and up, and build yourself back up the way Japan and Germany did. But they destroyed us. The country's destroyed. I'm not trying to be negative, but I'm telling you, the country is destroyed. About 5% have survived this, you know, with their bank account intact. And I don't know. Biden isn't going to change it. Biden isn't going to change it. He's not.
And that is David Feldman's aphorism for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Very, hang in there, David. It was great to talk to you.
I can do many things if you want me to be funny. I can do Sylvester Stallone if you'd like.
Should we end on a Sylvester Stallone?
Do I look like Sylvester Stallone?
You sort of do. Why? Are people telling you that? Are you getting
people say, Twitter? Adrian.
A little bit. A little bit.
Okay. Hang on.
I still am going for like one of the Hogan's Heroes guys as you're trying to break out the on the other side of the gate. But
yeah.
that reference, I think, is for like four people.
Okay.
David, always
thank you
a pleasure.
So much, Sam.
That was.
Thank you. I'm just going through some changes.
Healthy. I understand. We all are. We'll check in with you soon.
All right. And, I love you guys.
All right.
Thank you.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
David Feldman, ladies and gentlemen. Next time we come, I think he's going to be in full Colonel Kunst, right? This is
Colonel Kurtz.
Kurtz.
From Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I saw a snail on the edge of a blade. Yeah. This is good. Are we done?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Do we know how to hang up on David, or does he just stay here? David Feldman, ladies and gentlemen. We're getting into that era. All right, let's. I guess we might as well just do a Freebie Friday, right?
You're the boss.
That's technically easier, too.
Is it technically easier? Yep. Have we figured out how to do that, though? Let's go to the let's go to the fun half just so that we get the practice. How's that? But we'll still do a freebie Friday. Does that work?
Okay, I can play MR fun.
There you go.
Okay, here we go. Folks, just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you cannot afford it, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And we will hook you up. Also, check out the AM Quickie and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Check out the David Feldman Show. I don't know if he's ever going to do that again. It's mentioned he is. Also, of course, TMBS. This week, Cornell West was on. You can find that at patreon.com/TMBS or The Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. The Noma Key Show, you can find on patreon.com. The Noma Key Show or Nomi Key Const on YouTube. Also, The Antifada, patreon.com/TheAntifada. Check that out. Matt, what's happening on Literary Hangover, your sort of Twitch stream?
Yeah, so I've been twitching a Plague's Tale Innocence, a game that takes place during the plague times, while listening to secondary sources like Michel Foucault on A Plague Town. This all in preparation for Sunday's episode on Daniel Defoe's 1722, A Journal of the Plague Year, which is about a fictional journal about the mid-1660s plague.
There you go. I'm having trouble getting into my phone system. I don't know what's going on here. Bear with me one second, folks. Let me see. Okay, here we go. Getting there. One second. There we go.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report.
All right,
please,
let's go to
phone and give your one comment
fun
or
half
question ready.
And then we'll
listen
be
for Sam
right back
to call out your area code. Sam will be with you shortly.
Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?